WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with Tiago and Kena from Inevitable. I'm pretty sure you know these two legends. And yeah, today we will talk about a super exciting topic, which is how to prepare brands and developers for Web3. And more importantly as well, why should they care? So starting out, guys, really, really thank you for being here. It's really a pleasure talking with you and seeing you again. And yeah, in the beginning, I don't know, do you want to introduce yourself? Let us know what you're passionate about. And if people don't already know, please let us know what you're working on.
Okay, awesome. I can start. So my name is Thiago. I am 30 years old. I'm fascinated about Web3 for some years now. I think it was not called Web3 at the time, not it was not mainstream. But yeah, me and Kena, we used to work together in a startup. He was in the tech team, I was in the market team. And we were always talking about things we could build together and blockchain, crypto, and so on. And we started to explore this world with NFTs. And until today, with the bear market, like NFTs is a fascinating technology. And yeah, I like to you know, study and think about how, and of course, build things in practice, how all these new technologies will impact business from more, I don't know, glamorous industries like gaming or entertainment or sports, but also in more traditional, and I'm quoting this, but boring businesses and industries like healthcare or supply chain or energy, you name it. So yeah, I think that's it. I had positions in marketing, growth, product in the past. And today we have been doing some consulting and talks for companies that want to understand all these landscape and get ready for it.
Awesome. My name is Kaino Oliveira. Also a co-founder at Inevitable. By trade, I'm a programmer, already messed with robotics, game development, web development, and now I'm a full stack Web3 developer. Yeah, I'm really passionate about new technologies, new stuff. I love building things. So when Thiago raised the idea of building something together, I was really excited because I really admired this guy's work ethic. And yeah, on Inevitable, we have another developer as well, Janice, and me and him, we build everything from the ground up. And yeah, great project. Love to be involved in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and what I really love about all this is, and really, one thing that I need to mention here is the name that you both chose for your company is just sick. You know, how do you come up with, did you came up with that specific name, Inevitable? It's, you know, just genius.
People in the crypto space like to say like, it is inevitable, it was inevitable and so on. But this was more a coincidence because in fact, the name is based on a book by Kevin Kelly from, I think, 2016, called The Inevitable. And on this book, he talks about, I think, 12 technological forces that will shape the future. And he talks a lot about AI in the book. Like he was predicting 2023 and OpenAI and ChatGPT. It's an awesome book and really changed the way I see, you know, technology and progress and so on. So when we started to talk about the company, so yeah, Inevitable, it is inevitable. So yeah, it's a good name. We are not that original in terms of, yeah, it was a book. but yeah, it's from this book by Kevin Kelly, and it's an awesome book.
Sounds pretty cool. So I guess I don't know, blockchain also part of it, or am I going to be disappointed now? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember if he talks, you know, that specifically about blockchain, but like the major trends you can, you know, find blockchain in crypto and so on there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, super exciting. Hey, thanks guys for that already, for that pretty cool intro. So when we talk about, let's say, Inevitable itself, which is a platform, from my understanding, to educate in majority developers, but also people in other industries, right? For example, brands, I don't know if you also have content for that, but in general, let's dig deep into that area in general. So when we think about people in general entering that mysterious space Web3, then what, let's say, do you think or did you experience as the major hurdle, major issue for people actually trying to get into the space?
I think that, like, the internet today, we have a lot of information, and this is good because you can find anything, but it can be very difficult, especially in a field like Web3 and crypto, because it's like the ultimate FOMO field. Like, you are always feeling fear of missing out. So you're always thinking, hey, things are so fast. Oh my God, I'm not moving that fast. And I think when you have a field like this and a lot of content about that, people get confused. So, and this is something I have been talking about for a while. Like, when you are, and this is something I use, so it's something very personal, but when you're trying to understand about a new field or learn something new, I think you can, you know, find three very, very good sources and focus on those three sources for a while before you try to, you know, consume everything and follow 1,000 creators and 1,000 companies and so on, because you can get frustrated. You can, you know, make decisions based just on hype. Like, you see guys tweeting to the moon, look at this project, let's go invest on this, and you end up losing money. So I would say that this is a big obstacle we have now, like this about of information, and this will not change. Like, we will have more and more information. So I think people need to understand first why the technology is so important, and not, you know, you don't need to understand like the details about blockchain and nodes and so on. Like Kaina and you, for example, you guys know how, I don't know, gasless transactions work. I am not a technical guy. I can't do that in practice, but I know why that matters. So I think that you can bring what you already do in Web2, like if you're a marketer or a developer and so on, and start to think why all these new technologies matter that much. And then you can, you know, try to make some experiments, you create a MetaMask, you mint an NFT on OpenSea or Manifold or Third Level or whatever, and you buy an NFT like for $5 just to test thing. You make a swap and one swap, and you start to make things in practice, but always thinking about the underlying technology, why it matters, how this can change my industry, my day job, and so on. Yeah, I'm not sure if I responded your question.
to be honest, I don't know either, but I don't care, honestly. you said something really interesting, and that is basically how I interpret it now, something like use case first, right? Use the technology for the right purpose, when it actually provides some kind of value, right? For example, when you talked about gasless transactions, I know why, if I'm taking the right words now, why they're important, right? You don't know how they exactly from a technical point of view work, but you know when to apply it, right? When it actually generates value for either the user, a brand, or whoever. And that's already a really interesting starting point from my point of view. I don't know if you, Kena, have something to add to this as a tech guy yourself.
I would add that this part where you still miss information, it's not only a hard one because you have a fear of missing out, but because you also have a fear of just being scammed or tricked somehow. Because even for us, is we have to tread carefully on this space because it's a wild west sometimes. So I think that's going around and doing this simple steps not only help you get some use cases in your head, but also get acquainted with the space. Because an example we use all the time is that if you enter a page and you see that you're the 1 millionth user, you know by default that that is not true and you just don't click it. We toned that out already, but we don't have that same familiarity with Web3. So I think that getting familiar with it also helps to ease the fear of being tricked.
You just brought me to a really interesting point. One of the first podcasts that I did last year, basically already almost 12 months ago, was with Brett Johnson, who is former US Most Wanted cyber criminal. And one thing he said is, yeah, it's really exciting. And one thing he said was, don't try to be smarter than a scammer, because you don't. Because a scammer is just doing one thing, right? And that's trying to scam people. You're not trying to avoid scams all the time, every day of the year. But they have optimized their techniques over years or months at least, right? So it's really hard, depending on the level of the scam, right? We all know these low-level scams, but goes up to levels where I'm sure that I would fall into it as well. So that's a really interesting point.
I think there are two very, very vulnerable people. Somebody who doesn't know anything and somebody who thinks they know everything. And in Web3, you have scams to target both. Like people who just got in the space and people who are already, okay, I'm going to outsmart the market. This is such a good opportunity. That's what they get.
So. Going to outsmart the market. yeah, I think we see it with the, let's say, wallet hacks where some DeChains lost a couple of NFTs again and all that kind of stuff, right? But yeah, definitely a big issue. Just talking about that, I know it's not part of actually brands or devs entering the space, but have you two maybe some now fun stories to share when it comes to you discovering a scam or maybe even falling into it, if you want to share it? If not, it's fine too.
Yeah, I can share one. It was a NFT collection from a while ago, a contract for an NFT that they had those reserved tokens, you know? I just forgot to put the modifier to, so the only the runner can like mint reserved tokens, but fortunately we implemented the reserved limit. So when they reached like 10 tokens, it stopped minting. So that was the only like hack. It wasn't even a hack that I went through.
Okay, interesting. Tiago, any bored apes lost in the space or
no.
Good one. Okay. Yeah, cool stuff. Okay, now I know which question I asked originally. That was issues when entering the space, trains as a brand or as a dev. I don't know. When we think about Web2 brands, for example, that has never, let's say, actually worked at all with blockchain. How do you guys think a brand could approach this in a reasonable and good way? Because they also have to be careful from a risk and reputation standpoint.
Yeah, I think it really depends in a lot of different variables, like the company itself, the industry, the potential use cases, and so on. But something that we see a lot are companies thinking that they need to launch, for example, their own NFT collection. They, oh, okay, let's enter this world. Oh, this is interesting. Let's launch our own collection, and you have a lot of utility here, and let's create a Discord. Oh, that's exciting, and so on. And they don't even have like an Ethereum name service, or they don't have they never entered a Web3 community before. Like, there are a lot of different things you can do before launching a big project that where you can learn. Sorry, it's going to rain here. Where you can learn and you can test your audience, and your employees can learn, your stakeholders can learn, and so on before you take a step forward and say, hey, let's go NFTs. This is it. This is the technology for the future. Okay, it is, but it doesn't mean that you need to think about it today, and 1 month from now you need to launch a collection. Like, I don't think this is the right approach. You can do it, of course. It depends on your audience, your use cases, and so on. But this is something we have been saying for a long time now. Like, you don't need to launch a collection upfront. This is one of the potential strategies, but you can start with a sponsorship, or you can start by producing content on Mirror, for example, that is a Web3 publishing platform. Like, why are brands publishing there before they launch a giant collection? And of course, there are a lot of different strategies. You can enter existing communities and so on. But yeah, I think this, and I think this is natural for the market. Like, when you have a lot of hype and a lot of companies and people reading the headlines and seeing, hey, look at these guys, they are making millions selling NFTs. Let's go, let's do this. Okay, this is natural. But of course, we need to maturate the market. And I think these frameworks and these playbooks will appear more. And of course, we are producing something about that. So, then Kaino, we are currently writing a book called The NFTs Playbook that is exactly for that, brands that want to enter the space, and they need to see all the variables that are in the space, and okay, maybe this is the best strategy for us. Maybe we don't need a collection. Like, we have a lot of smart tech guys here. Let's build tools for Web3. Let's build integrations for Web3. This is another strategy. So yeah, I think that's a good way to go.
I definitely love that mindset. From my humble opinion, I can understand why brands do this. I think everyone can, because that's something where you have a potential direct revenue stream, right? And then know, we just got millions out of this. Let's build some things around it, right? It's a really low risk approach as long as you don't harm your reputation. But I really, really love what you said, Tiago, and that's understanding the space, from my understanding now, right? Joining communities, writing articles, maybe even building tools in the space that help people that are already navigating there. And that builds trust. That's some kind of, I wouldn't say social proof, but proof that you actually want to bring the space forward and are not just there for a cash grab. Right, which mitigates the reputation risk once you maybe launch NFT collection. So that's super exciting. From a developer's perspective, Kana, do you what let's say what issues or hurdles do you see there, or how to navigate that maybe?
Well, I think that's independently from where you start and where you want to go, if you want to be a smart contract developer or a Web3 front-end developer, I think that understanding the overarching architecture, because, for example, we already have in our heads the architecture of how a website works and like how the server communicates to the front end, and that you can grasp that. And understanding where blockchain situates on that and how to get each part to interact with each other helps a lot, even though you don't want to mess with front end or back end. So that architecture, it's very worth learning. But not only that, I wouldn't suggest understanding like the inner workings of how a smart contract runs for somebody who is higher level, like Thiago, not higher level in the sense of the stack, but just business-wise. But for a developer, is very important. I think that getting your fundamentals, like getting some solid fundamentals, it's definitely the way to go. You can definitely start off with Solidity already. Just program, deploy, run it. I know how it works. But if you get some fundamentals, you will be really comfortable in the space. So that would be my suggestion.
Like that as well. One thing that comes into my mind, right? Smart contracts, once deployed, the code is all forever there, right? Which means the code needs to be resilient. What is your, let's say, recommendation when it comes to actually write secure contracts as soon as possible, right? Because they should be secure from the start, in best case.
I think that ideally, depends on your the use case for your contract for sure, but getting some good base on auditing possible vulnerabilities also it's always important. So you have that in mind when you program. But if you're going to do something that has been already done, not deviating so much from already established normatives from Open Zeppelin, for example, because they are pre-audited. And if you need a lot of security, your smart contracts can be audited by a third party. Not only that, but when I discovered proxy contracts, my mind was blown. Okay, I don't have to get it right the first time. This is so good. But again, it comes back to the use case. And depending on what you want to do, proxy contracts might not be the most ideal approach. That's it.
Yes. Yeah, I fully agree. It's a difficult topic for me as well. Oftentimes when I have new team members or something like that, it's always challenging, right? Because I honestly don't know how to approach that fully, right? Because anyone can write a smart contract. It's not a really difficult language, but writing a good contract is a completely different story.
Efficient and secure. I think efficient is much harder than just secure. Secure, you can pay attention to some specific stuff, and Open Zeppelin again did a bunch of stuff to help us out. But the efficient part, you always have to keep that in mind.
Obviously, 100%, especially when you're on layer one, such as Ethereum most of the time. Going back to brands, maybe Thiago. We just talked about the hurdles and how brands could approach that. Are there some, let's say, interesting or awesome projects or things that you have brands, that you have seen brands doing when actually entering the space, or just in general doing in the space, that you really liked from a personal standpoint?
I think two of the best cases, three maybe, are Reddit, Adidas, and 100 Tips, because Reddit, they use it like what they already had, the community, all the social mechanisms that they already have, and they just, you know, plug in something new on that, and that's it. Like an awesome approach, didn't talk about NFTs and profit and so on, a very clean communication. And Adidas, I like it because they started by joining communities and doing collabs, and then they started to launch their own products on this space. So I think this is a very good strategy. You start by, you know, learning with existing communities, existing businesses that are building on that. You absorb that knowledge, and then you can start building your own projects or technologies and so on. And 100 Thieves is a very specific case that a lot of people not know, but they are an esports organization. And they had a free mint to celebrate a championship that they won. And they just posted about that on Twitter and said, hey, this is what we are doing. This is a collectible. You can, you know, own one here. And this is how we are approaching the environmental impact of that. They use a polygon on that. So it was a very simple, yet a very good way to, you know, bring their audience to that instead of saying, this is our original collection. This is our roadmap in our utility. No, it's just a collectible. So you can, you know, celebrate this with us. And then, of course, if that makes sense, you can add more layers in terms of complexity in that. So I really like these three approaches. I think they are very different players as well, very different industries. But they all had a different approach, a different strategy that was successful.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Thiago. What I personally really see here, and please disagree with me if I'm wrong, is all three of those approaches or companies actually generated some kind of value for someone at least, right? And we look at a lot of, especially in the last few years, a lot of these crypto native NFT collections, they usually, oftentimes, the Goblin NFT collections and so on, it's a completely different approach. Doesn't mean they don't work, maybe in short term or even long term, because of branding, building a brand, right? Which always works. It's just really difficult. But 99% that follow this approach, or even more, fail, right? And that's what I really like. Oh, as I said, please disagree with me if you don't agree. But that's a really interesting point on that side. Now we actually talked a lot about how and what went good, what went bad, and what can happen and everything. So some people that are not really in Web3 or don't really believe in it might ask themselves now, well, why? So why should I care about all this stuff? What's so special? What does it help me to do? Do you guys maybe want to bring some light into this for, let's say, from a brand's perspective and also maybe from a technical point of view, why this is superior in some use cases in contrast to, let's say, centralized systems? Maybe, I don't know, Kena, do you want to start with the tech side of things?
Of course. So we like a lot of the JavaScript parallel. Sorry, my cat is new. We're talking about Web3. So we went from Web1 to Web2. And a big technical difference between the two of them was the adoption of JavaScript, which allows us to modify the web to a given user identity or preferences. But initially, it was taken as a necessary change. It made websites heavier. And yeah, web was just meant to share the information, link through pages. So all this stuff is unnecessary and doomed to fail. But we know now that the web that we have is powered by this. If you entered Facebook, your Facebook page would be the same as somebody else's. Instagram, your email, Google Meets conversation. So it was a small technical difference that allowed a different type of interaction between the user and the web. And the same applies to integration of blockchain technologies into the web. It allows a it allows a different type of interaction. Again, there is a lot of hype and stigma associated to tokenization, blockchain. People look at it and turn their face, and it's weird if they are not in the space. But I think in the future it will be as boring as utilizing SQL database. It's not something like super hype and super differential, but it will be something inherently integrated into platforms in a way that actually utilizes their strengths. So the inherent value that it brings. So again, I just like Web 1 to Web 2, it's just a new technology that allows a different type of interaction.
Awesome. I signed that as a dev, fully with this. Tiago, brand, company, I don't know, perspective, would love to hear it.
Yeah, I think that blockchain has a lot of native properties that are very powerful, but one of my favorite things is the power of composability. So the idea of having, you know, permissionless innovation is so powerful, and I think that we are not even aware of how this can change how people will build products or build business or new business models. We always say this, and I'm not the technical guy, but I always use that analogy, and can be wrong, but I always say that smart contracts are like APIs on asteroids, because you can build, like, with APIs you can build a lot of new things based on a central entity, but with smart contracts, you know, in all the power of the blockchain and all these permissionless innovation environment, we can't predict what people will be like. It's a new paradigm in creativity and what people can bring and how people can solve problems and how companies can innovate with each other, with other companies, with other with users, with customers, with partners. So this is one of my favorite aspects, and I think a lot of people do not understand this, and it can be very difficult to explain why this is important, but I also see that a lot of people will use blockchain-based applications based on permissionless innovation in the next 5-10 years, and they will not, sorry about this, but give a shit about that. They just use that. You know, it's like cloud. Like, we're not always talk about, hey, cloud is an amazing technology, man. Look at this.
Well, no, some people still do.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, but we just use that, you know. And I think blockchain will have the same, will follow the same path. And mostly because of the power of the permissionless innovation paradigm that is very, very different. Like, we had this week Twitter saying that they will close APIs and now you have to pay to access the APIs. We had Facebook and Instagram doing that some years ago and you know, just shutting down a lot of features in their APIs, and that killed a lot of business, you know, overnight. So yeah, I think the composability of the blockchain, smart contracts, and so on, we are not even close to start seeing how powerful this is.
You said something really interesting, that smart contracts on other APIs on steroids. what I really liked about that, let's say, term was more that, let's say, that special, how to say it? That special, what's the word? The special characteristic, you know, the special thing about that piece of data, right? It's permissionless, as you said. It's not coming oftentimes from a centralized source. It's actually coming from a more trustworthy source that hopefully nobody has superior control over. And that's, as you said, a super interesting aspect. And I think as well, that's definitely going to be huge. And
yeah, Chris Dixon has a great talk about this. And he says that people usually think that OpenSea is built in the same way as other marketplaces. And so that's not true. Like, they have like a 2.5 fee, and they need to have that fee, you know, that is low fee, because it's all based on smart contracts. We know that they have some centralized aspects and of course network effects and so on, but it's much more easier to launch a competitor against OpenSea, for example, or Haribo or Foundation, rather than Amazon or any other, you know, Web2 player. So this is very powerful when you have this landscape of almost anyone can bring their own innovations and build using what is ready, what was already built. This is powerful.
That's an interesting point. Basically, it's, I call it forced open source, right? Because smart contracts are inherently open source because they are public, right? At least when the contracts are verified, which is oftentimes demanded so that people trust the contract, right, the code. So that's a really, really interesting aspect. And yeah, it definitely makes things much easier because there are more open source resources in that sense, right? Well, from my point of view, I really enjoyed that discussion. I don't know, maybe let's wrap it up a bit, and I will just throw that to any one of you, whoever wants to answer. 3 key takeaways to wrap this episode up, and yeah, why one should care about this space.
Well, I think that from a developer's perspective, sometimes I was sad because I lost some waves, like on the beginning of the internet, it must have been so nice to learn this and profit from having a lot of experience and being a battle-tested developer. But blockchain and Web3 stuff, it's still that. There are so many problems to be fixed and so many improvements to be made. And you can see that going on live and things being found out and patterns being defined. So I think that's the possibility of growth is very big. And again, if somebody doesn't enter because of the stigma that crypto and NFTs have, just know that, like Thiago said, this kind of stuff, like the knowledge you acquire now, will be used 5-10 years down the line in a bank or like in a borrowing company, like something more orthodox. So yeah, even though you don't want to do a career switch because of market recession, any sort of that sort of stuff, it is still very valuable to learn, because it's that's what we do. We learn new languages, stacks, and it's just a new stack. It's not something out of this world. So get to it, my brother.
Oh, well, I guess, Thiago, that was the call to action for you to wrap it up as well. Or I'm just wrong. You're muted, by the way, mate.
To the developer watching.
Yeah.
For a child. Get to it, brother.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Okay. I was confused. Yeah, I think you can go back to the basics, and this is not, I don't know, a very popular thing, but I really think people could read the Bitcoin white paper and try to understand why Bitcoin was created, and because Bitcoin started everything. And then you can, you know, start practicing that and write something on Mirror or create an account on OpenSea. You don't need to go for a trade and, you know, make $1 million trading in NFTs. You're probably just, you know, gonna lose money on that. And you start using these tools and start, you know, learning in practice. And then you can start to think, hey, how wallets can, you know, change the marketing landscape, how blockchain can change cybersecurity, and so on. And you can start to ask yourself these questions and try to think how you can build that on your company or on your career, and so on. So I think these three first steps are a good way to start, and things are moving so fast. It's a paradox, in fact, because things are moving very fast. Like when me and Kaina started, you know, studying and making experiments and so on, like Polygon was not a thing, you know. And now Polygon is everywhere. But at the same time, these revolutions are not, you know, do not happen overnight. So I always use this example. Here in Brazil today, people will say, hey, maybe this digital marketing thing is important, right? And man, digital marketing is a reality for years and years and years. So this revolution is just getting started. If you start now, of course, you have better chances, but we will have a lot of new waves, a lot of new innovations, and you can, you know, you need to have an open mind to surf these waves.
That's a great ending call to action. Have an open mind to surf these waves. Hey, thanks guys, really had a lot of fun, and also learned a lot myself. And yeah, would say thank you for your time. I know you two are really busy guys, so I really appreciate you showing up here today. And yeah, as always, if I can do anything for you, let me know. And yeah, also thanks to the audience. And yeah, I don't know, if you have any last words, guys, feel free to drop it here. All links of your projects will be in the video description. Yeah. So thanks all.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having us.
WaveAct, the Web3 software company that understands what you want.